Hello, everybody. Welcome to our second iOS section. My name is Tommy MacWilliam, and today we're going to be looking at some GUIs on the iPhone. So kind of picking off just where we left off with lecture. So as usual, all these videos, as slides and source code will be posted. Slides and source code for this section are already posted at cs76.net/sections. So today, we're going to go a little out of order here, given where we just left off in lecture. So let's continue taking a look at building interfaces on iOS devices and how to work with outlets and actions. And then we'll get back to just reviewing some Objective-C concepts, make sure we're all good to go before we really dive into making some cool apps. So I will jump ahead to here. So now we're in Android. We spent a lot of time writing XML for our views. So no more for an iOS. Instead, we'll be primarily using Interface Builder. So this is kind of a more drag and drop kind of way and a little bit nicer than the drag and drop Interface Builder we saw in Eclipse. So we'll be using Interface Builder to edit nib files. So it's now the extension has been changed to XIB, so better pronounced zib, but they're still pronounced nib because they used to end in .nib. So when we open up Interface Builder and we click that little right sidebar thing, we see a few options to the right. So the first is going to be called the File Inspector. So this is where we can set some options for the nib. We won't really touch this one much yet. Next is going to be the Help. So whenever you click on something in Interface Builder and you wanted to see the documentation really quickly, if you open up that second tab on the Interface Builder sidebar, you can see some documentation, and that'll link you to a more detailed list of methods and all the things you can do with that UI view. Next is going to be the Identity Inspector, and so this is where you can modify object properties. Again, something we won't really be taking a look at yet, but something we will be using is the Attributes Inspector. And so this is where we can kind of customize the UI view. So things like text color and text size, we can modify those from the Attributes Inspector. Next is called the Size Inspector, and this is where we can kind of snap our UI view to somewhere on a grid or resize it to automatically fill the height or the width or control how it's going to be changed when the user rotates the device. And finally, the Connections Inspector. And this is where we can see all the different ways that we can connect this UI view to things in our code, whether that be the outlet or the different actions associated with that UI view. So just we saw in lecture kind of how to actually do this. So in order to add a UI view to a window, we can just drag it over from the little objects library in the right sidebar. If you want to select it, it's just a single click, and then you can modify that over in the inspectors. So those four little icons that we saw over to the left. So the first is called the file's owner. And so this is going to be the file that actually initializes the nib. So at runtime, your nib is kind of going to be kind of unfrozen. So it's kind of like freeze-dried, packaged up, and something needs to unfreeze it and load it into memory. And so the actual piece of code that does that is going to be called the file's owner. So you'll generally be doing this from a controller, and we'll see more of that later. Next, we have the first responder, and that's basically the UI view that is currently responding to the user's input. So if there's something like a keyboard up, that keyboard is going to be the first responder. Next is the app delegate, which we'll take a look at later. And then finally, the window. And so this is kind of your parent container for all the UI views that you'll be adding to your app. So let's take a look at building a simple app with Interface Builder. So if we create a new project here, so we'll just do a new project. So I'm just going to select a window-based application so I don't have anything generated for me. And we'll just call this Section 1 app. We're just going to target the iPhone, make sure these two things are unchecked, or you're going to get some extra code that we don't really need to take a look at. And we'll just create it. Okay, so we're going to go into our project. We're going to open up the nib file. So right now, we can't really see anything. We don't know where that drag and drop thing is. So if we click up here, we're going to open up the right sidebar. I'll move him over. And so now, by default, when you first open this, you may be presented with something that looks like this, and you still can't really see where those objects to drag and drop onto the window are. So to get at those, you're going to want to go to the bottom right, and you're going to open up the objects library. And now we can see this nice view of all the objects that we can add to our project. So let me just pull this up a little bit. So we can view them as icons, or we can view them as text. So now let's add a label to our app. So a label, just like in Android, is just going to be a piece of text. So notice that I have these nice blue grid lines, and these are going to be based on the Apple Human Interface Guidelines, which is a very dense but great read if you're looking into designing good user interfaces for your apps. And so you'll notice that right here, this means that the label is centered on the window. Now, if I want to modify some attributes of this UI view, I'm going to go up here. Whoa, not that far. I'm going to go up here, and I'm going to open up the Attributes Inspector. So this is the connections. This will be the size, and now the attributes. So if I want to change the text of the label, I can just edit this text column, say this is a label. Now if we zoom out, you notice we have a little bit of a problem. So now we've made the text longer than the label, however, we haven't adjusted the label's size. So automatically we're just going to truncate, and that's because we've set this line breaks to truncate tail. So we can modify that, or we could just make the label bigger. So pretty intuitive, we can just drag and make it bigger. So if I wanted to do something like change the color, I can do that too. We can go over here to text color, click on this, check out our colors. Maybe we want to make it red. And so now let's say that we want to center this label back in the middle of the screen. So we could go back and drag it until we get those grid lines again, or we can use our size inspector to make this a little bit easier. So notice over here where it says arrange, we have position view, so we can drag it around. Now if we open this up, we can see we have these two options to center horizontally or center vertically. So if I just drag this over to make it even farther from the center, assuming I can do that if I zoom in. So if I just pull that over there, now if I click on center horizontally, you notice it's going to snap to the center. And now if we click center, oh, wrong one. So if we click center vertically, then we're going to snap vertically to the parent. So any questions on that so far? Okay. So now from our app, let's do something with this label from Objective-C. So let's say we just want to change the text and maybe change it to something based on that's going to happen in runtime. So when the user's using the app, they can't just open up Interface Builder and modify that text property. So let's say we actually want to modify it from Objective-C. So in lecture, we saw this controller, but I don't really feel like making a controller, and so we'll have a bit of bad design practice here, and we're just going to put this in the app delegate. So we know that we need to create a UI label object because we just created that label. So let's create a UI label, and we'll name it underscore label. So remember that this isn't strictly necessary with this new version of Xcode, but I've been using the old version of Xcode for a long time, and so I just do this out of habit. So we create a property for this IVAR. We'll say it's not atomic retain. And so generally when you're working with UI views on your apps, you're going to want to use non-atomic and retain, just as kind of a rule of thumb. So now we're going to say IB outlet. So this, again, is just a directive to Objective-C that's going to say, okay, this property here is going to be something I'm going to be working with in Interface Builder. As far as the compiler is concerned, this actually isn't doing anything. So now we know that it's a UI label, and we're going to call it label. And so now we have an instance variable and a property that we can use to access this label. So now inside of our implementation file, as usual, we just need to synthesize the properties. So we called it label, and it's going to connect to the instance variable called underscore label. So now we can modify what this text says. So we know that we have a private property called label. So let's say self.label. So this object itself has a property called text. You'll notice that its type is an NS string. So we should just be able to set this to a string. So let's say new label. Right, so there we go. We've modified the label because we first created it inside of our interface, and now we're going to modify it as soon as the application launches. So if we run this, almost. Okay, that was an unusually long build, but it finished. Taking an unusually long time to run this. Okay, so finally we run it. But we didn't change the text. What's the issue here? It still says this is a label, even though we just set this text property to be something else. The problem is that we didn't tell Interface Builder that this label that we added to our UI view should be connected to this label we just created in our delegate. So in order to connect these two things, we're going to select our delegate. We're going to control click and drag over to the label. So the reason I clicked on this app delegate is because this is where I've defined my label to be. If I use another controller, like we saw in lecture, but just not today, just we're not getting too complicated. So if we had another controller, we want to select that. But because we put it in our app delegate, we're going to click on this app delegate. We're going to control click and drag over to the label. Now if we let go, you'll see here we have this little pop-up that says outlets. And so this list is populated by all the properties we declared as IB outlets, or Interface Builder outlets. So now if we click on label, we get a nice little flashing thing to let us know that the connection was made. Now if we go over here to the connection, Now if we go over here to the connections inspector, we now see that we have an outlet called label, and it's connected to this label that we've just added. If you wanted to remove that connection, we could just click on this X and the connection would be gone. So now if we run the app, which actually compiled in a reasonable amount of time, we see we have new label. So a lot of times when you're debugging these apps, connections are very, very easy things to forget to do. It's kind of like adding that activity to your Android manifest where you just get this unexplainable behavior of your app crashing. Making the connections in Interface Builder is a very, very simple thing to forget. So, continuing on. So we added this IB outlet thing to our property. Now, IB outlet is not the type of that object. Remember, we call that a UI label, and so that's something that's defined by Apple for us, but IB outlet is not the type of it. So the way IB outlet is actually implemented is there's just kind of an empty define statement. So when we're actually compiling the code, we're just going to take out all of those IB outlet things. So that's not the type, and so you know, UI labels don't have two types. It's not a type of IB outlet. This is just telling Xcode that, okay, I want this to show up in my list of outlets. So now the way we're going to use these is, again, we're going to define our properties in our interface. We're going to want to synthesize these in our implementation. Again, those instance variables I added are not necessary, as we saw in lecture. We can just synthesize that and have all of that generated for us. And then finally, we want to make sure that we connect them in Interface Builder to the properties we've defined in the classes. So as we saw, connecting them is really simple and intuitive process. So now once we have these outlets, how do we react when the user is interacting with these outlets? So to do so, we're going to use IB action. And so in a sense, IB action now is the type of our method, because as far as the compiler is concerned, it's just going to go through and replace everywhere it sees an IB action with the type void. So we don't want to say something like IB action int and then call our method, because that doesn't really make sense, because we're just going to replace IB action with void, and then void int doesn't really make sense. So IB action, though not technically, is effectively the type of our method, even though it's just going to be replaced with void, so any method with IB action is just void. So we're going to connect actions in the same way that we connected outlets. So we're first going to define them in the interface, declare them in the interface, define them in implementation, and then connect them the same way. So let's take a look at some different ways different things we can do with our actions. So let's open up our first app here. So first, let's take a look at the nib. So here I have three things. The first is a UI label. You'll notice the text is centered. The way I did that was I just resized the label to kind of fill the entire width of the screen. And then over in the attributes inspector here, I clicked on the center for the alignment. Next, we have a text field. We have a placeholder, so that's just the text that appears when the text field is empty. And finally, we have a rounded rect button. So you'll notice that all three of these things are connected to things that I've defined in my app delegate. So here, We have a connection for the button, connection for the text field, and a connection for the label. So we're all good to go. We're not going to run into any issues. So now I want to respond to the user tapping on this button. So the way we do that is we want to first define a method or a callback that should be called when the user taps on that button. So let's take a look at our interface. So here, really simple, I've just created a method called changeText because I want to change the text of that label, and I'm going to replace it with whatever the user typed in. So you'll notice that the return type is an IV action. So this is going to tell Interface Builder that we want this to be able to be connected to. Now, if we look in our implementation, changeText is pretty simple. So we have this thing called label. So we've called it label as an instance variable. We've synthesized it, so we're good to go there. And so now we're calling the setText method. So again, we're just going to change the text of the label, and now we're going to change it to the text that was entered by the user in the text field. So again, that property is called text field. So to get that text, we can just send the text message. So this is equivalent to what we just saw earlier in saying self.label.text is self.textField.text. So remember that these properties are just automatically generating getters and setters, and this dot notation is just another way of invoking these setters and getters. So these two things, these two lines here, are totally equivalent, and they're both going to do the same thing. They're going to grab the text from what the user typed in the text field and going to replace the text of the label. So just to make sure this behaves as we'd expect, we can run this app. Again, more slowly than I would have liked. Okay, well, in the interest of time, let's just quit that, and you can trust me that it works. So, now what if we want to improve our user experience? Now, maybe we don't want to let the user press that button. What if we could change the UI label as the user was typing? So to do that, we're going to have the same, what looks like the same code. So we still have this change text method. Our interface looks the same. I'm actually going to click run right now so that it goes while I'm explaining it. So our interface is the same. Our implementation is the same. However, if we take a look at our zip file, or our nib file, I should say, Okay. So now if we take a look at our text field and the connections therein, you'll notice that I'm using a different IB action. So before, we just use the default. And so the default IB action for a button is this touch up inside. So this, you know, the user, the equivalent of kind of on touch up or on touch end. In JavaScript, just the user lifted their finger off the button and we want to fire the callback. So instead, we want to attach this action, this same method, to this editing change. And so this is going to fire every time the user edits the text field. So that's value, if the text field's value was changed. And so the result, so how is this different than value change? So value change is used for other UI views, which we're going to see shortly. Just because the user is actually editing the text, it's just the different callback that's used. But this value change will be used by some other UI views, which we'll see shortly. So if I selected value change, nothing would happen. Yes, we can actually take a look at that. Hopefully this will run faster the second time. But as you can see, as I edit this, that my label is changing as I edit it. So if I instead do this value changed, so I can delete this connection, I can click on value changed, I'm going to control drag over to my app delegate, And we have this method that's only IB action called change text. We click it, and now value changed is associated with this change text method. So I run it again. Okay, that's a little faster. Now if I run it again and I start typing, you notice that this isn't the right callback because we're not changing the value of the text field, we're changing its text. So just a different callback that's used when the value of a text field is changed. So is that the documentation somewhere? Yeah. So if you look up the documentation for a UI text field, all of these different things will be detailed for you. But you don't have to look because now I told you. Okay, so let's go back. So you'll notice that I've been putting all of this code inside this application did finish launching with options, which is an extremely long method name. So now when we're dealing with iOS apps, we kind of have a different notion of lifecycle than we did with Android apps. So with Android apps, we basically had lifecycles for each activity. We really didn't manage the lifecycle of our entire application. iOS, on the other hand, is a little different. So we have a life cycle for our actual app. So this application did finish launching with options is kind of your equivalent of on create. So this is when the app is launched, the NIP file is loaded, but it's still not displayed to the user. So next we just go through this define cycle. You have all these flowcharts and documentation. But we have application did become active. And so that's any time we've moved from the inactive to the active state. So the equivalent of on resume, you could call it. The application will enter the foreground, so that's when the app was backgrounded by the user. So in iOS 4, users can run apps in the background. If you double tap the home button, you can see all the apps that are currently running. So this is going to be fired when the user has hit the home button or the equivalent and has sent the app back to the background. So next we have app will resign active, so that's the app is about to be backgrounded. It's not going to be in the foreground of the phone anymore. Did enter background, the app has been backgrounded. And finally, the app will terminate, and so that's when you actually close the app by selecting a little red minus sign in the list of running apps. So just a quick overview of lifecycle there. Any questions on that? Yep?
Can you achieve that with the simulator? Can you see that background and foreground with the simulator?
Can you see that background and foreground with the simulator? You should be able to, if only this would run a little faster. So if I hit the home button, and I double tap the home screen, you'll see down here that I have all the apps that I'm currently running. I can flick through these. To close it, I'm going to hold down on it. And we see this little red minus sign. Now when I'm closing these, I'm terminating all of these apps, and I'm removing them from memory. So any other questions on lifecycle really briefly?
So you get the background by holding down on the home button?
Oh, we're going to double tap the home button. So we're just going to double click it there, and that's going to pull it up. To go back, you're just going to tap it once, and we'll go back. Okay. So that's just kind of, you know, why we're putting all this code in application did finish launching with options, and not because it's the longest one we could find. So now briefly, let's talk about delegates. And so delegates are not something that are unique to iPhone, but it's more of a general design pattern that you'll even see in languages like Java all the time. So the basic idea of a delegate is that instead of defining some actions in the class itself, you're going to create a new class and a new instance of that class to handle all of the actions for you. And so we have this app delegate that is kind of the delegate for our entire application, well named. So this app delegate is going to sit there and respond to any events that happen in the system. So those events include all of those activity lifecycle callbacks we just took a look at. So we also have a notion of protocols. So we're not going to look at creating our own protocol yet, but basically a protocol is just like an interface in Java. It specifies a list of methods that should be implemented by the class. You can have required and optional methods in Objective-C, but the way we say that we're using a protocol is with these little bracket things. So we saw that our app delegate had a protocol of UI application. We can also give our app delegate some other protocols to make it respond to different events. So again, this is just something that says where if we're using a protocol, we say that our class will define the required methods for this protocol and that our app will get notified, that this app delegate will be notified when these events occur. So a concrete example of this. We have a delegate called the UI text field delegate. And so this protocol defines a number of methods that have to do with how we're interacting with the text field. So one of them is this text field should return. So this is when the user has pressed the return button or the done button on the keyboard. Now we can allow either the keyboard to go away or we can force the user to keep editing and not allow them to get rid of that keyboard. So what this is really useful for is hiding the keyboard when you're done using it. Hiding the keyboard to the user when the user is done using it. How many times could I say user in the same sentence? So now instead of connecting an IB action, we're instead going to use this UI text field delegate. So by saying that we're using the UI text field delegate inside of our interface, we say that we're going to define methods that are declared by the UI text field delegate inside of our class. So you'll notice that we're not adding any methods to our class down here because we're only using those methods that would have already been declared inside of the protocol. So we're just using this text field should return method. So this is going to get fired when the user presses the done key. By connecting our text field to this app delegate, this is what is going to get notified. So again, we're just changing the label again. However, we're also adding this resign first responder. So as I mentioned, the first responder on an iOS app is the thing that is currently interacting with the user. So if we don't want that to interact with the user anymore, we want to resign its status as the first responder. So after we click done, we want to say to the user that we no longer want the text field to be the first responder. We don't want the user to be interacting with the text field anymore until they click it again. So once the text field is no longer the first responder, there's no reason to have a keyboard on the screen, and so iOS is going to hide that keyboard for us. So one more important thing to note is when we click on this text field, over here in our attributes, we have this attribute for the return key. So by default, I believe it just says the word return. However, we can change the text of that return key to make it more clear to the user that they should press that button when they are done. So let's fire up this app. Oh, good. So here again, what's going to happen is that no longer are we just going to modify the label immediately, and we don't need a separate button. Instead, we're just going to utilize the built-in done button on the keyboard, and that's when we're going to change the value of that label to match the value of the text. So now once we start editing, you'll see this done button, which was a return button before. And so once we start typing and we click done, then the keyboard is going to hide. So any questions on using that delegate or the notion of a first responder?
Mm-hmm. Is it possible to set your own options for what that key says, or are those all Apple-approved options for return or done?
So good question. I believe we can only say what Apple has told us. However, an important thing to note is that no matter what we change this value to, this same callback is going to be fired. So even though I said its text field should return, even if the value is something like emergency call, that same method is going to be called. But I'm pretty sure we can only say what Apple has specifically said we can say.
So why didn't it actually set the text?
I may have forgotten to connect it. Let's see. Aha, I did forget to connect it. So if we drag our connection over, we click on outlet. So there you go. It's so easy a mistake to make that I just made it. We run it again. We click done, and I probably forgot to connect this, and I did. So there you go. So when something doesn't happen that looks like it should happen, you probably forgot to connect your outlets. So to do that, really simple, I just started the app delegate, I control click, I drag over, and now I can see a list of potential outlets, and I connect them. So another question?
Is that all going to
So where is all this information stored? So it's really just put in the nib file. You'll notice that our M and H files, no code was added for us. It's just the code that we added. So this really is all happening inside of the nib. So now that I've connected everything, I click Done, and the label indeed does change. So very important to make your connections. Perhaps less intuitive than in Android, where it was really clear that you needed to get the view by the ID, and then you clearly had the view. Where in iOS, it's not immediately clear if you've actually connected it. So very important, connect to your outlets. And so now let's just take a look at three UI views, or little widgets that you could find useful as you're creating apps in the future. So the first is a UI slider. So this is just a slider. It has a little button in the middle, and the user can slide between maximum and a minimum value. So to get the current value of the slider, we can just send the value message. We can also set a max and a min, and so the slider value is always going to be between 0 and 1. And so we can set a maximum of, say, 0.5 and a minimum of, say, 0.2, and all the values of the slider will be relative to that maximum and minimum. Next is the UI switch, among the easiest. Just has a single property that is called on. If on is set to yes, then it's on. If on is set to no, then it's off. So we can get and set that property. And finally, the UI segmented control. And so this is basically a button in which the user can select only one button at a time. And so we can get the currently selected button and the segmented control. We can control how many there are. And then we can get the information at a given index. So let's just take a look at using some different views inside of Interface Builder. So now our nib is pretty cool, and we've just added all these different views. So the first is the slider. And here we're going to display the current value of the slider. We can display the current state of the switch and the current state of the segmented control. Now each of these reset buttons is going to set the state. So let's look at the code to get and set the state of these various UI views. So first in my interface, I've declared a property for each of those. Because we need to be accessing all of these, we've declared properties for them all. And then finally, some actions that are going to respond to the slider being changed or anything else like that. So these were all connected, hopefully, via Interface Builder. So if we just select a random one like on, and we view its connections, we can see that we're going to be using value change. And we'll be using value change for all of these. So let's look at the actual implementation code. So really simple, we want to display the value of the slider to the user. However, unlike in Java, we can say, you know, print line on, say, an integer. We can't do that in C. Instead, we need to construct a string from a float, because we can't just set text to be a float. So to do that, we're going to create a new NS string. And in the constructor to our NS string, we're going to specify a format. So remember these format code things that basically will substitute in some value that you'll define later. Replace this %f with a value that we'll specify later. Now in this case, we're just using the value from the slider. So I could also say self.slider.value. And so this will set the text to this NS string. So just as we can get the value, yep. So do you have to say self dot in all of these things? Yes, we do. We have a couple of options. So because they're properties, we need this self dot in order to say that it's a property of the current file. So we can say self.slider label, and you'll notice that autocomplete helps us there. Or you'll notice that I've called these instance variables underscore slider label. And so I've done that to distinguish between instance variables and properties. So if we don't want to say self, we can actually just say underscore slider label, and now I can get its text. So those are kind of the two options, the two different ways to do that. If we're using a property, we want to say self.something, but just because we've declared a property, that doesn't mean that we can't use the instance variable anymore. So we can just say the instance variable and then the message.
On the line below that.
If we just delete self dot, the compiler will.
So
if we just delete self dot, the compiler will probably yell at us. Yep. So the compiler has yelled at us. It's saying that slider label is undeclared. So we just need, whenever using a property, we need to have this self dot. So it's optional in Java, not so optional in Objective-C.
Could we replace self dot with underscore right there syntactically?
So could we replace self dot with underscore? We should be able to.
Okay.
Yeah, so it built fine. We can just do that. Okay. So that reason for the whole stylistic issue of the underscore is to distinguish between properties and instance variables so we don't get confused. So the rest of the code is pretty self-explanatory, just some examples of how we actually want to modify things. So let's just take a look at this segmented control. So perhaps the naive way to display to the user what the segmented control is, what the currently selected value is, would just be to kind of remember ourselves what the different options were. However, that's probably not the best idea in the world because we know what the options are based on the segmented control. So if we look back, we saw that we have this title for segment at index. So what that's going to do is it's going to take an index, so an integer, and it's going to give back the title for that index. Now, how do we get the index? Well, we have the selected segment index, which is going to be the integer value of what the user has currently selected. So instead of going through this, we can just say, so we still want to set the text. However, we don't just want to set it to something we're defining ourselves. Instead, we want to say self.segmentLabel, and we want to send it the message, send it the message title. So here we go, title for segment at index. And so this needs an index. So to get the index, we can just say self.segment.selectedSegmentIndex. So there we go, a lot more efficient than these three if statements, where if we wanted to change the value of the button, we'd have to go back into the code and do that. So if you find yourself doing this in your apps, probably not the best design decision, but we can just say, we can actually get the state of our segmented control using these messages. So remember that these are messages and not properties. So I didn't say self.title@index, but I'm sending a message to my object that's title for segment at index. So I'm not going to run this in the interest of time, but you can flip through this just for some examples of how to actually use these various widgets. They're pretty straightforward in that a lot of the properties are named the same thing among widgets. So you'll find text all over the place. Okay, so in the time we have remaining, let's just go back and take a look at the Objective-C code we didn't really get to see in detail last week just because of time again. So just a quick review, we have two parts to our classes. First is our interface. These are going to be .h files. And if we're using other classes that we've defined, we also want this at class directive. So this is called a forward class declaration. This just says that some other class with this name exists, and so don't yell at me if I try to use it. Inside of our implementation, which are the .m files, where we're going to be defining all of our methods, we want to have these hash import statements, which are just like pound include statements. So when we're creating these methods, both in our interface and our implementation, we have two options. The first is an instance method. And so this requires an instance of the class to be used, where a class method, like alloc, doesn't actually require an instance of the class, but you're sending the message to the class itself. So we've seen the syntax of declaring these properties when we looked at these UI views. Just going to have at property in parentheses. We can assign how the values are mutated and accessed, as well as the non-atomic atomic. And then we're going to synthesize those properties in order to actually generate those setters and getters. So what we didn't really get to see last time was GDB. And so this is actually really cool. So just a quick review of some basic commands. We have two options when we're stepping through code, next and step. You can abbreviate in GDB by just typing N or S. So next, we're going to go to the next line. Step is we're going to actually go into the method that is called in the next line if there is a method. If we want to go to the next breakpoint, we can just hit C for continue, and then PO is going to print out an object. So let's take a look at this code from last section. Oh, come on. So let's take a look at how we can use GDB to step through this code. So inside of my main.m, Let's say that I want to kind of step through this grade function to see how grades are actually being assigned. So to create a breakpoint, which is going to pause the execution of my code when it's reached so I can interact with GDB, we're just going to click on the line that we want to create a great breakpoint at, and now we have this little blue breakpoint. So now when I run, you'll notice that we have stopped at breakpoint 1. So we've paused execution, and now I can interact with my application down here. So here we have this little prompt. So notice it starts with GDB. And over to the left, we have all of the current objects in context. So we have the students array. If we want to see what's inside of the array, I can just click on this arrow, and we can see each of these student objects. So now if I want to go into the grade function, I can't just click next, because that's going to evaluate the grade method, and I'm not actually going to see what the grade method did. So inside of this GDB prompt, I'm going to type in step. Now I hit enter. You'll notice that I now jumped into my grade method. And the Xcode code editor will automatically go into the file where you are, so you don't have to worry about listing the surrounding files, as you may have done if you use GDB in the console. So now you'll notice that I'm just initializing my random number generator. So this probably isn't the function I want to step into. I just want to let that happen, and I don't really want to see how it happened. So if I click next, or not click, type in next, we're going to evaluate that function, and now I can step through how we're assigning grades to students. So after I create a grade, if I want to see what that grade is, I can print out grade. And now we see that that grade is currently equal to 2. So now we can see how we're stepping through. So you notice that that condition was satisfied. So now if I print out student.name, now we can print out the current student's name. And so this student object is inside of this for loop. So if we go to the next iteration of the loop, this name would be different. But to do that, as I just forgot, you can't just use properties, but we need to send the student object the message name. And so that name is going to be an NS string, and so that's an object. So we're going to use PO for print object, and GDB can spit out what the name of that student was. So now if we want to finish the program, I can just type in C for continue, and the program is going to run through. Exit code 0 means we exited successfully, so no issues there. So any questions on GDB or how we can use it? Yep?
So when you did print object, you took the student object, set the message name. If the message name had caused it to manipulate the object, would it actually change the value on the fly?
So if this name had actually caused it to manipulate the object, would it change it on the fly? It should, actually. So if we click on run, so now we're in here in Tommy. So this Tommy, we know, has a message called name. So we can say Tommy name. So that printed out. Now we also know that we have a method called setName because we have a property. So if we say Tommy setName equal to something. Maybe not. So let's actually step into this. Okay, so let's try to manipulate the grade. So if we print out grade, now we want it to set grade equal to 2. We can do that, and now when we print grade, it's actually 2. So GDB can actually modify values in memory, and those modifications will be reflected when the program is running through. How to do that in Objective-C? That I don't know off the top of my head, unfortunately, but this is how we can modify primitive types. We can just say set, and then those values will be reflected. So this is actually a pretty useful tool for debugging. If instead of changing a value and recompiling it, we can just change it in GDB and see the results. Yep?
What's the rule for naming synthesized setters?
So what's the rule for naming synthesized setters? So when you synthesize, you're going to get a getter, and that getter is just going to be the actual property. So if you had name, the getter is just going to be name. The setter, on the other hand, is going to be set, and then it's going to be the name of the property.
Okay, does it change the case of the first word of the property?
So does it change the case automatically? Yes.
So what if you have a property name, lowercase name, and a property name, uppercase name?
So if we have property...
Is that illegal?
Ooh. That is, so that is definitely bad style. We can certainly go for it. I would not recommend that doing that. So if we have the same, it's going to yell at us. If we have name and name.
We have to synthesize them.
Right. So we go up here and we'll synthesize name. It's not even letting me type it. So Xcode is unhappy with me. And so, yeah, so you are going to get an error there. Oh, I've got a comma. Let's see. Yeah. Huh. So we compiled OK. We probably are just going to confuse the compiler if we do something like this. Feel free to experiment with the oddities of Objective-C. But generally, as a style convention, we're going to want to start all of our properties with a lowercase letter, just to avoid that. So that's the short answer there.
I would say it was a bad idea, but I just wondered what happened.
Yeah, I can't say I've actually tried that before. The compiler would likely be pretty confused, would be my guess. So let's, in the time we have remaining, let's just take a look at the actual code behind this, because we're using these NS mutable dictionary and NS mutable array, which are collection objects you may find useful. So first, let's look at this fast enumeration. So this is just a special syntax for iterating over an array. So we could also just use the traditional syntax and get the length of this array and then create an iterator variable and then get the current index. But this fast enumeration is a lot faster to type. So we know that self.grades is going to be an NS mutable dictionary. So to iterate over that, we can just create an iterator that is of type ID. So this is just a generic object. So this could be any type of object. We don't know what it is, and we don't really care. So when we're iterating over a dictionary, the iterator variable is going to be iterate over the keys of the dictionary. So just like we saw in JavaScript, this isn't the actual value in the dictionary. This is the key. So if we just print out student, this will print out the student's name. If we want the value, then we're going to send this object for key method. So we know that student is the key, and so we can get the object associated with that key with the object for key method. If we're just using an array, on the other hand, then we can just, so self.ohs, this is an NS mutable array. So if we're just using an array, we don't have to worry about keys and values. And this OH, so for office hour, is actually going to be the value in the array. So it's not just going to be 0, 1, 2, 3. It's actually going to be the value. So let's take a look at how I'm using office hours here. So we're using the NS date object, which is pretty handy because it handles a lot of date formatting issues. So right now, self.ohs, this is just an NS mutable array, really simple, and so we can add an object. So as was mentioned, an array doesn't care what it has inside of it. All it knows is that it has a bunch of objects. So if we insert a date object into the array, we have no problem there. So now when we're iterating through the office hours and we want to display them, we can use a special class called the NS date formatter. So what this is going to do is it's going to take a generic date, so an NS date, and we can output that date in a variety of ways. So if we wanted to format it, for a European date or American date, this special class handles a lot of that annoying string concatenation and substitution issues for us. So to do that, we're going to create a new formatter using the general way of initializing new objects. We're going to say alloc, and then we're going to reserve space for the object. We're going to call init, which will actually construct the object. And now we're going to use the setDate style, and this is just going to be a list of predefined constants we can use to display the date in various ways. So now, instead of outputting the date object, we can pass it to our formatter to display the date. Now I notice here that I'm releasing this object once I'm done with it. So we want to do that in order to prevent memory leaks. However, if I didn't release it, and my application was running fine, and I wanted to see maybe if I had any memory leaks in my application. So up here in run, if I hold this down, I can select this analyze. So you notice already I didn't even have to run it, but it's telling me we have a potential leak of an object right here because we're never releasing it. So we'll look more into these various options later, but just know that as you're playing around with iOS and you want to make sure that you haven't had any memory leaks in your application, we can just click and hold on this button up here, select Analyze, and may have to click Analyze, And it'll tell you if you forgot to release any objects. So that's there. Also in our dealloc, we're also making sure that we're releasing everything. So again, when we release an entire object, we don't also release all of the properties inside of that object. So we unfortunately don't get that for free when we use a synthesize to get our getters and setters, but we have to release them ourselves. So to release them, we're setting these value equal to nil. So we could also send a release message to the instance variable, but if we use this setting the property equal to nil, that will automatically send a release message to the instance variable, and it's perfectly okay to do something like this. So where if I had called release, our application was going to crash at this point because I'm trying to release an already released object, but it's perfectly okay to send messages to nil. If it's already been released and it's currently nil and we send it a release message, that's fine. Nil is just going to ignore it. Yeah?
Can you string together a bunch of things on the left-hand side of the assignment and then like in JavaScript or whatever and then just do it on one line?
So could you string together a bunch of these in the same line? Sure. That should be no problem there. We can check if that works by using our friend the analyze tool. So if we comment both of those out, we come up here to analyze once we get rid of the actual memory leak. So yeah, it's not reporting anything. We do get a warning just because these things are different types. And so it's probably general better practice to just set them all equal to nil. But strictly speaking, this probably would work. As you can see, Xcode doesn't particularly recommend you do that. But if you're ever in doubt, this analyze option is really, really helpful. And we'll take a look at all these different options in more detail shortly. So any questions on any of this example here? If not, then we'll see you next week. Feel free to ask questions on help.cs76.net if you run into any issues with iOS setup.